In the spring of 1141, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi emigrated to Eretz Yisrael, or so we think. If he did, Halevi only managed to spend about 2 months in Yerushalayim, because he died sometime in the summer of 1141. The well-known tale of his death was first recorded in the year 1500 by Avraham Zakuta. He writes, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi haya ben nun shana. He was 50 years old, was the author of the Kuzari. Kishahalach la'eretz Yisrael, when he settled in the Holy Land of Israel. Viki Balti, writes this author at the very beginning of the 16th century, Viki Balti mizakein echad. I heard from some storyteller, Shebehigiyu el sha'arei Yerushalayim, that when Rabbi Yehuda Halevi reached the gates of Jerusalem, Kara et Bigadav, he rent his garments, his shirt, v'halach b'kisolav, and he went barefoot al ha'aretz, v'yishmal echad, and one Arab horseman, lavash kina alav mirov divakato, noting Rabbi Yehuda Halevi's great piety and devotion while praying at the Western Wall, v'halach alav b'suso, and he assumed his horse, v'yamsuhu v'yamituhu. And writes, quite tragically, Rabbi Avraham Zakuto, that this Arab horseman trampled Rabbi Yehuda Halevi just moments after he finally reached his destined homeland, Jerusalem and Eretz Yisrael. The story of martyrdom, it's really a part of our heritage. On one occasion, Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik referred to this text. He even said, this is a story that is told. I don't know if it's true, said the Rav, but he still incorporated into his Tisha B'Av morning recital his commentary on the keynote on some Tisha B'Av, probably in the 1960s or 1970s. In truth, the debate over Rabbi Yehuda Halevi's death, as romantic, as dramatic as it seems, comes down to a semi-legible scribble. What do I mean? Probably too far back, most of you, to see this, but thanks to modern technology, we have artifacts you can download from the Cairo Geniza. And in a letter published in the, written, not published, letter, authored by a Natan Bar Shmuel in 1141, 2 months after we know Rabbi Yehuda Halevi passed away, he talked about Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, even mentioned the Sha'arei Yerushalayim, the gates of Jerusalem. And 11 lines from the bottom, angled upward, are three letters, an acronym, a Rashi Tevot. It either says Zion Kuf Lamed or Zion Tzadik Lamed. Well, if it's a Kuf, that probably stands for Kadosh, Zecher Kadosh Lebracha. In other words, this Natan Bar Shmuel was alluding to the fact that Rabbi Yehuda Levi was somehow killed al Kiddush Hashem, Zecher Kadosh Lebracha. If it's a tzaddik, and it's very, very hard to tell, I can show you afterward, then there's probably nothing too dramatic, too romantic about Rabbi Yehuda Halevi's final moments. But it turns out that the 16th century witnessed the emergence of a number of what I'll call Jerusalem legends. Stories about famous, usually rabbinic luminaries. The meaning about this phenomenon, tales about Yerushalayim, I think offers a very important lesson for this incredibly auspicious anniversary, this 50th of Yom Yerushalayim. Consider another case, this one of Rabbi Avraham Ibn Ezra. The great biblical commentator and poet, he died not too long after Rabbi Yehuda Halevi. For centuries, the prevailing understanding, the notion of Ibn Ezra, was that he was probably buried in Colera, Spain. In the decades after he passed away, however, a rumor had spread that Ibn Ezra was the victim of demons posing as a breed of British canines. What do I mean? There's a story that's told in rabbinic folklore. Vishamati, writes one author in the 13th century, Vishamati mi bnei England. That's rabbinic Hebrew for England. Shisham mate Beinehem, that Ibn Ezra died amongst British Jewry. Kipam achat. Hayarochev biyar. Ibn Ezra was strolling, riding through the English forests. Uba bein rov klavim. And he found himself surrounded by a pack of klavim, of dogs. Shahayu omdim umeniyam alav. And they were staring at him, at Ibn Ezra. Vikulam shechorim. They were all of a dark nature. Ukeshayatzam ibnehem. And very wisely, when Ibn Ezra departed from this pack of British dogs, vadai elu heim hashedim. It occurred to him that these were in fact demons. Az nistakin. He realized that his life was in terrible peril. Vechala. And he got sick. Umeit meoto choli. And he died. Apparently, this was retribution for Ibn Ezra's complete denial of demons in rabbinic tradition. This version, however, didn't last for all that long. Once again, it was Avraham Zakuta who popularized a new tradition about the Ibn Ezra's final resting place. Aval anishamati, again, anishamati, I've heard there's a kol, there's a lore that's swimming around the 16th century. Ani shamati shu kavur be'eretz Yisrael, that in fact Ibn Ezra wasn't in Spain. He didn't die in Spain, nor did he perish by a pack of dogs in England. Rather, kavur be'eretz Yisrael b'li safek. Without doubt, he died in Israel. V'niftar shnat taf taf kuf nun dalet. V'chein shalchu. And not only that, but I have it on good word, on good authority, from Rabbi Shlomo ben Shimon. Me'eretz Yisrael, who himself resides in Israel, Shera Be'enav, who can testify to the fact that Kavar Rabbi Avraham Ibn Ezra Sham, that Ibn Ezra died, writes the 16th century author, in Israel. In both tales, one about Rabbi Yehuda Levi, the other one about Ibn Ezra, it is apparent that Jewish storytellers who had emerged in the 16th century revealed new and important information about some of rabbinic tradition's most important historical figures. You get the sense that these charismatic raconteurs and their very attuned listeners were attracted to some particular plot, a point of view. See, in the wake of the Spanish Inquisition, Jews needed hope, didn't they? They needed something to believe in, not just after the Spanish Inquisition, but the lesser known but just as dastardly Inquisition in Portugal. Later on in that decade, Jews were hankering for some kind of hope. Many found this in the form of aspirations or even in anxieties that fit very well into what we might call today religious Zionism. See, 16th century Jews anticipated redemption. Some even settled in Eretz Yisrael. They scoured throughout Europe and North Africa for a Messiah, for a Mashiach. They drew meaning from their moment. To push their Zionist agenda forward, Jews created, modified, or perhaps they simply just rediscovered a heritage of rabbinic patriarchs who yearned, who aspired to spend their days, their final days, however, in Yerushalayim. Just like Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi, these Jewish women and men gave their lives, their homes, their dreams to see this mission come to fruition. There's more. When we think about other Rishonim, other folklore, it seems readily apparent that the Rambam should also fit into this very peculiar genre created in the 16th century. In the Sefer HaCharedim, published a diary, some sort of fragment that we know nearly for certain was from Rambam, from Maimonides' own pen. He writes the following, also in the 16th century. Tuesday, the 4th of Mar Cheshvan, in the year 4926, this is the Rambam, we arrived in Jerusalem from Akko after a dangerous journey. I entered the site of the great and holy temple and prayed there on Thursday, the 6th of Mar Cheshvan. On Sunday, on the 9th of Mar Cheshvan, I departed Jerusalem for Hebron to kiss the graves of my forefathers in the cave, Marat HaMachpelah. On that day, I stood at the cave and praised God for all he does. So are the words of the Rambam. If accessible, why wasn't this published sometime earlier? After all, the Rambam died at the very beginning of the 13th century. There was never a downtick to the importance of the persona of the Rambam for all those centuries. Why did this text, this testimony, this testimonial that Rambam somehow made it, as briefly as it was, to Yerushalayim to pray at the Kotel and Marat HaMachpelah? Perhaps, I would suggest, that the need to connect the great Maimonides to this Israel-centered quest compelled the publication when it came to this particular moment, this epic in Jewish history. In a word, the reinvigorated Jewish spirit needed the Rambam in the 16th century, in the wake of the Inquisition, with the great need to believe in something more, to believe b'kol levavcha, b'kol nafshecha, that Mashiach was on his way, that the people they saw lose their lives, their livelihoods, they lost it for something. It meant a lot that they could believe that Mashiach, that a redemption, would come post-haste. A final example is Nachmanides, is the Ramban. There's no question that Ramban made his way to Jerusalem in the 1260s. It was certainly no secret to rabbinic writers and readers that Ramban simply loved Yerushalayim. He wrote about it in almost all of his writings, in particular in his Chumash commentary. But perhaps no greater Zionistic tract came from the Ramban's pen than his most well-known letter addressed to his son, Nachman, written shortly after the father reached Eretz Yisrael. Yivarecha Hashem b'ni Nachman. May God bless you, my son Nachman. Re'et b'tov Yerushalayim. To see the good. Son, I hope you too arrive in Yerushalayim, writes Nachmanides. Ure'ei banim levanecha. To see good of Jerusalem and to see your children's children here as well. Ukeshulchano shel Avram Avinu. And the very table of Abraham, your forefather, yiyeh shulchanecha. So too should it be your table. Yerushalayim, ir hakodesh, ani kotev lecha. And I write to you from the holy city of Jerusalem. Ki shevach v'hoda l'tzor yishai. And I thank God for the rock of redemption. V'zachiti ba'iti l'shalom b'yom ha'tishii l'yerech elo. And I write to you at this particular moment, I have merited to come in peace to Yerushalayim on the 9th day of Elul. Amazingly, this letter first appeared in the 16th century. It appeared in 1519, appended to another work of the Ramban that had absolutely nothing to do with this letter, save for the fact that it was written by the exact same author. This letter of the Ramban was perhaps the centerpiece of a growing literature, letters, diaries, even myths, that impressed upon readers the importance of experiencing Yerushalayim. More to the point, all of these texts represent a clue in how Jews communicated with one another, how they transmitted their traditions as they awaited and tried themselves to bring about the Geula, the redemption. We're still waiting. We're still waiting, anticipating something so incomprehensible. In the aftermath of the miraculous Six-Day War and the unification of Jerusalem 50 years ago, my predecessor at the Hebrew Theological College, one of the founders, actually, of this congregation, and our teacher, Professor Eliezer Berkovitz, summed up his theology of Yom Yerushalayim in this way. The thought of Yom Yerushalayim has its roots in the very foundation of Judaism, but might have been mere wishful thinking, writes Eliezer Berkovitz, had it not been supported by the reality of Israel, its existence, its survival, its return to Zion. One must appreciate the irrationality of it all before one can grasp its significance. In terms of exclusively man-made history, writes Professor Berkovitz, Israel's existence is irregular. A people like that of the Jews is not supposed to exist. Its survival is anomalous. A people as irregular as the Jews is not expected to survive. Its return to Zion, concluded Dr. Berkovitz, is frankly absurd. The history of the modern state of Israel defies logic. Our possession of Yerushalayim, al-Achat, kama v'kama. It's a sentiment that's truly, perhaps the hardest to articulate. But to try and relate, we might once again reimagine ourselves, all of us together, as storytellers. We ought to celebrate our folk traditions, to recount all of that stories that are told, even if, like the Rav, like Rabbi Soloveitchik, we don't know for sure, for certain, whether they are true or not. What's most important is that inside these stories are values, they're visions of what we expect, what we anticipate for the future. Let's not get caught up in the history, in the facts, in scribbles, in detective work meant sometimes for historians. Let's not worry all too much about the irregular or supposed to have existed. Instead, let's return home. Let's tell our children and our grandchildren our collective stories and the more recent personal ones. The stories about Yerushalayim, we all have them. How long ago we were at the Kotel, that we saw Yerushalayim, the first time we saw it. The stories that we recall of June in 1967. The stories for those of us like me who don't know, who can't remember 1967, but once upon a time heard about it. Let's talk about our year in Ezra. Let's talk about our summer planting on a kibbutz. Let's talk about the stuff that is absolutely incomprehensible to anybody. And as we say it to ourselves, it seems too remarkable to believe. It seems like it's not the stuff of history. We have to tell these stories. Doesn't matter if they're true or not, because the secret is that what's most remarkable of all, what's most unbelievable, is what we believe every single moment of every single day. That these stories, that the history, what we're celebrating on this such important moment, the 50th anniversary of Yom Yerushalayim, the true secret is that as remarkable as our stories are, our collective ones and our personal ones, what's most amazing is what we're hoping to experience in the future, which is going to outmatch everything that we know. All of the stories, true or not, hopefully soon in our days. Thank you.